Hollywood Homicide Uncovered is part of the Dark Hollywood Collection in the Reels files on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Be sure to subscribe for new episodes each Thursday. Then go to Reels.com, check the top of the screen, and enter your zip code to find out how you can watch more chilling cases like this when you watch TV. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com for the dark crime series and specials you'll find only on Reels Channel.
Yes, I am going to say that I'm a thug. That's because I came from the gutter, and I'm still here.
He was a West Coast rapper turned hip-hop superstar who rhymed about thug life.
Tupac had throngs of fans in the millions.
And kept company with a real-life entourage of gang members.
Suge Knight basically became the leader of the mob blood gang in City of Compton.
The intersection of fame and crime leads to the mysterious death of one of music's brightest stars.
And news just broke all over the world that this big rapper was dead.
The first cop to arrive on the scene recounts Tupac's last harrowing words.
Who did this to you? Who did this?
And it's up to a determined detective to sort out the truth from the drama.
No matter what his gang affiliation was, he's still someone's son.
Who killed Tupac Shakur?
When you know that the eyes of the world are looking at you, that you try extra hard to solve the case.
September 7th, 1996. It's Saturday night on the busy Las Vegas Strip when police get an emergency call.
All units, shots fired at Koval and Flamingo. Vehicles fleeing the scene.
I was a bicycle patrol sergeant for Las Vegas Metro Police. A call came out. They said that they heard gunfire at the corner of Koval and Flamingo, and saw some cars speed off after the gunshots. So at that time, those vehicles are heading south. I'm heading north on my bicycle, and we're virtually driving right at each other. I've got a pack of cars. I don't know exactly how many, maybe somewhere between 5 to 7 cars. We know there's been a shooting. We don't know what happened. And we know that these guys are fleeing from the cops after a shooting. At that time, my first thought was, how am I going to stop these guys when I get to them? I'm getting closer and they're getting closer. And as they turned left, the car kind of spun out, 2 flat tires, and everybody came to a stop right as I was pulling my bike into the cars. All of the doors flew open on the cars, and I thought for sure this was going to be a shooting situation.
Get on the ground! All of you now! Get back!
So I pulled out my gun. There's probably about 10 guys that popped out of the cars, and I could tell right away these were hardened gang member types.
Get down! I said get on the ground! Every one of you, now! Stay down!
I could see in one car there was somebody who didn't come out, so I thought, this is probably the shooter. This is the one guy who's not getting out of the car. So I walked towards him. I walked towards the car. As I was approaching the car, I saw this guy coming up my backside.
I said, get back!
And this guy is huge, and he's bleeding. This guy was clearly a big threat.
The wounded man is Suge Knight, a record producer and music executive.
Suge Knight also had been shot in the head, and the bullet had pierced his scalp, but not his skull.
Stay back now! I said stay back! No.
But he's acting like nothing happened to him. He's still running around, he's screaming, he's yelling, and I pointed the gun at him.
Stay back!
He'd put his hands up and he'd walk backwards just a couple little shuffle steps, but then when I turned away, he'd start coming back at me again.
Hey, whoa! Step back! Step back!
And I'm trying to watch the guy in front of me because I'm thinking he's the shooter, and all I could see was kind of a silhouette in the car. And I was looking right at the passenger side door. I noticed there were bullet holes all in the side of that door and in the front windshield of that car. So I grabbed the car door with my left hand while I still had my gun in my right, and I was trying to pull open the door. The guy who was sitting in the seat kind of fell out with the door. I grabbed him with my left hand and kind of brought him down to the pavement. He was still alive, he was still breathing, but he had on a lot of gold jewelry, and all of the gold jewelry was covered with blood.
Talk to me! Talk to me! Stay back! Back up!
At that time, Suge Knight starts yelling at him, "Pack! Pack!" And he's just repeatedly yelling, "Pack! Pack!" That's when I realized, okay, this is Tupac Shakur.
Officer Carroll now knows the identity of the injured man, but he still doesn't know why Tupac's been shot.
What happened? What happened? Talk to me.
His eyes were moving, and as Suge Knight was yelling at him, "Pack," I could see that he was trying to yell back to Suge Knight, and he just couldn't physically make it happen. And I could tell that he was in dire medical condition. I could see that there were multiple torso gunshot wounds, and I knew that there was a good possibility that this guy was going to die. So I asked him, who shot you?
What happened? Who did this?
In police work, we have something called a dying declaration, where if somebody believes that they're going to die and they are able to give you information before they do, that is admissible in court.
Who did this to you? Who did this?
So I was trying to get a dying declaration from him. And he's just basically kind of ignoring me. He's not even looking at me. He's looking at Suge. And I could see he was trying to fight to get the words out, to yell back at Suge, and he was still kind of squirming, kind of moving. And then all of a sudden, in an instant, he changed. He went from trying to fight to where he just kind of gave up, just realized he wasn't able to physically do this anymore. He looked at me. This is the first time he's acknowledging my presence. But I could see him getting his breath together to tell me something. Our eyes met, and he looked at me, and he said, "F*** you." And that's exactly how it came out, with emphasis. This was a guy who was pissed off, and that's the way he said it.
Paramedics arrive and take Tupac and Suge to the University Medical Center of Southern Nevada for treatment. As hospital staff treat Suge, Tupac is rushed into emergency surgery.
He was shot 3 times. One hit his one of his knuckles and went through his hand. Another entered his chest under his arm, and another went into his abdomen through his pelvic area and floated there. It was the chest wound that he was bleeding internally.
Tupac is placed on life support and put into a coma so surgeons can treat his extensive injuries.
The arteries from the heart and lungs were damaged, and that was vital. And so the first surgery they did was to plug up and try to sew him up internally to stop the bleeding.
Meanwhile, Tupac's family and friends keep a 24-hour vigil by his side, with fans nearby.
And it was sad. You know, it was a really sad atmosphere because he was in such grave condition that nobody knew which direction it was going to go in.
Tupac's shooting is international news.
This was the scene on Saturday night, just a couple of hours after the Tyson-Seldon heavyweight fight. Tupac Shakur was on his way to a post-fight party. He never made it.
25-year-old hip-hop superstar Tupac Shakur was born in East Harlem, New York, into a life of crime and poverty.
Tupac grew up in projects. He was exposed to kind of the underbelly of life. His stepfather was arrested and charged with crimes and did 60 years. His real father was in prison as well. You know, his mother had been in prison. Afeni Shakur was Tupac Shakur's mother. In her younger years, she was a Black Panther, and she actually got pregnant with Tupac when she was in prison. Tupac grew up in his early years with members of the Black Panthers all around him, and it was all about politics and trying to beat the system and change the system. Tupac started rapping on the streets in the projects. He lived in Oakland in what they called the jungle. It was one of the worst low-income housing projects. At age 21, he released his first single, and it hit number one. It was called Trapped.
Trapped was only the first of dozens of major hits where Tupac exposed racial prejudice and police brutality. Over the next 4 years, as Tupac crusades against racial injustice, he becomes an actor in Hollywood films and the number one selling hip-hop artist in the world. His double album All Eyes on Me is one of the highest selling rap albums of all time.
He was a charming guy. He was a handsome, charming, talented guy. His appeal was very broad, more than just African-American hip-hop fans. And I think it's because his music was real. He rapped about what he lived, and it seemed real to people, and they bought into it.
By the age of 25, Tupac is an international icon, a political artist, and a multimillionaire. But at 9 o'clock on September 7th, 1996, he's fighting for his life after a drive-by shooting on Las Vegas Boulevard. Lieutenant Wayne Peterson is among the first detectives to work on the case.
No matter what Tupac's background was, what his criminal history was, what his gang affiliation was, you know, he's still someone's son. A homicide detective takes every case personal. We want to solve every case for that victim's family. I knew going into the Tupac case that it was a high-profile case, that there would be a lot of scrutiny, and I was willing to accept that challenge.
And the first question Detective Peterson will have to answer is, how exactly does someone murder a superstar? In 1996, superstar hip-hop artist Tupac Shakur is one of the best-selling musicians of all time. But on September 7th of that year, he's gunned down in the streets of Las Vegas. Tupac is sent for emergency surgery to stop internal bleeding from multiple gunshot wounds. But he remains unconscious, bleeding heavily into his chest cavity.
Then there was another surgery to stop the bleeding. And the only way to do it was to spread his ribs and, you know, cut his ribs and pull one of his lungs out as an effort to try and stop the bleeding.
Las Vegas Metropolitan Homicide Investigator Wayne Peterson begins to piece together what happened moments before the shooting.
We knew, you know, basically what happened. The victims were stopped at the red light at Koval and Flamingo, interacting with a carload of females next to him on the left, when this white Cadillac pulled up on the right side of Suge Knight's car. Some witnesses saw an arm come out of the back of the Cadillac and numerous shots from the suspect vehicle.
The shooter left 40 caliber shell casings in the street, bullet holes in a car door, and almost nothing else.
In most drive-by shooting situations, you're lucky just to get a vehicle description. And most of the time, the evidence stays within the vehicle and the suspect vehicle, and it flees. And so nothing's left behind. We were somewhat fortunate that the assailant had put his arm out the window when he is discharging the gun, which caused shell casings to fall onto the ground.
Without the murder weapon, bullet casings are of little use to Peterson.
We don't know where the weapon is, obviously. If we had a weapon, we could match the ballistic evidence we have.
No one on the street saw the shooter's face or plate number, so Peterson hopes the other victim in the car, Suge Knight, can tell him more about who pulled the trigger.
We asked Suge Knight to come in and talk to us, give a statement. Unfortunately, we can't make anyone cooperate.
He left town back to L.A., even though he had a house in Las Vegas. Las Vegas police could not nail him down and interview him.
Suge Knight isn't the only witness that won't cooperate. There were up to 20 men in 9 vehicles traveling in Tupac's entourage that night. Not one of them will speak with police.
With every gang-related crime, nobody wants to talk. Nobody wants to be seen cooperating with the police. It's very frustrating to know that people know what happened and won't cooperate.
With no witnesses to help, homicide detective Wayne Peterson wonders if Tupac was the victim of a targeted gang hit.
We found out that Suge Knight and Tupac were affiliated with the Bloods and had Blood gang members working for them. And so they had those gang ties.
Tupac and Suge were shot on their way to Suge Knight's Club 662, which on a telephone keypad spells mob or member of Bloods. As high-ranking Bloods members, both men are natural enemies of their rival gang, the Crips.
Crips and Bloods are historical enemies. They've fought over territory, they fight over drug control, they fight over just the fact that one wears blue and one wears red. They don't really have a whole lot of reason or rhyme to their conflict. It's just a conflict that started and never got over.
Was Tupac the victim of a rival gang hit? Without witness cooperation, Peterson has no way of knowing. But even without witness testimony, something doesn't add up.
Tupac was a high-value asset, obviously. Should have been Suge Knight's, main concern is keeping him safe.
High-value gang members are usually well-protected, especially when they travel in packs. Las Vegas police officer Chris Carroll tells Peterson that Tupac and Suge Knight were traveling with a virtual armada of support at the time of the shooting.
There was an entourage, several vehicles, of people who were actually bodyguards and providing security for Tupac and Suge Knight.
Peterson wonders how someone could get close enough to shoot Tupac when he was surrounded by a convoy of Bloods. Perhaps the young women at the crime scene had something to do with it.
There were females that were in a car next to Suge Knight's car, and they were talking back and forth. So there was some question in the investigation whether the women in the car next to him that were engaging Tupac were a deliberate decoy.
Peterson interviews the women to find out if they were pawns in a gang shooting.
All right, ladies, I just need to ask you a few questions about tonight.
The women tell Peterson they followed Tupac's entourage, then nudged their vehicle to the left of Suge Knight's car.
There was some speculation in the media and some people, saying, hey, what were those girls doing there?
Oh, want to take us with you?
Absolutely.
Did these young women distract Tupac as the shooter pulled up and took aim?
Tupac was a womanizer. He was a ladies' man. When he was on tour, he slept his way across the country. So that's why that scenario wasn't necessarily out of the realm of possibility. He had a hard time saying no to women.
Las Vegas police run background checks on the women.
The women that we talked to had no criminal record and were not affiliated with any gang that we know of.
He was hanging his head out the window and we're all just chatting.
When the girls were interviewed, it became apparent that they really had just kind of been Johnny-come-latelys to go party. And they were out of town in Vegas to have a good time, just girls, and they were quickly eliminated as having anything to do with anything.
Peterson rules out the women as decoys, but he still has no idea who fired the weapon or why. Suge Knight is a man with a checkered past. Now Peterson wonders if Tupac was the intended target.
There's some speculation that was Suge Knight the target and was Tupac Shakur just on the line of fire?
Investigators will soon discover the truth about the dangerous man who got Tupac out of prison.
Suge Knight had at least three contracts on his life.
And put a hip-hop prodigy in the line of fire.
If you like what you're hearing, check out Hollywood's Dark Side on Reels channel. You'll find true stories and mysteries of celebrity icons on Autopsy that reveal what really killed American legends like John Wayne, Anthony Bourdain, Aretha Franklin, and Dennis Hopper. To find Reels on your TV, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Then check the top of the screen and enter your zip code to find Reels on your system in your area.
On September 7th, 1996, 25-year-old multimillionaire, racial crusader, and hip-hop sensation Tupac Shakur is on top of the world when he's gunned down in the streets of Las Vegas. 2 days after the shooting, Tupac's survival prospects are bleak.
They couldn't control the blood loss. Tupac was not stable. They were unable to stabilize him, and his odds were I was told at the time by a surgeon were 1 in 5 of survival.
Detective Peterson still doesn't know who shot Tupac. But while ballistics experts confirm the precise trajectory of bullets through the car door, Peterson wonders if the intended target was the man seated next to him, gangster and Death Row Records executive Suge Knight.
We looked at Suge Knight being involved as a victim and a witness, and looked at his criminal record, his background, to see why, you know, someone may have wanted to target him.
A towering 6'4 and 300 pounds, Suge Knight is an iconic music industry titan who once played football for the Los Angeles Rams.
And Suge Knight majored in business at UNLV, and he wanted to become an entrepreneur, and he did.
In 1991, Suge creates the Death Row Records label with rapper The D.O.C. and Dr. Dre, who signs on his protege, Snoop Dogg. Knight's label helps make hip-hop the biggest money-making music genre since rock and roll.
Hip-hop was not mainstream. And when Suge Knight came around, he brought it to a whole different level because all of a sudden, hip-hop was playing on pop music radio stations, and that hadn't happened before.
The meteoric success of Knight's Death Row Records may not have been possible without Tupac Shakur, Knight's biggest earner. Peterson digs into Suge's past and learns that Knight rescued Tupac from a notoriously violent New York State prison.
We had looked into Tupac's criminal history and found out that he had been incarcerated.
In 1995, a year before he died, Tupac was convicted of first-degree sexual abuse against a 19-year-old woman.
But Tupac was out partying in New York and was at a nightclub and met this girl. And then later, he was in a hotel room, and the girl came with him. He was in the hotel room for a couple of days. And a few days later, she claimed she'd been raped by him, and then he was convicted. But he's always felt that he was set up.
The judge sentences Tupac to serve a minimum of 18 months in Clinton Correctional Facility, a maximum security prison known as Little Siberia.
Tupac was thrown in with a bunch of hardcore convicted killers. He could have gone to Rikers. Instead, they sent him to hardcore Clinton, and life was not good. You know, when a nice-looking kid comes in, because he was a kid at that point, he was, you know, what, 20, 22, 23 years old, they prey upon new guys who come in, and so he did not feel safe in prison, and it was a very, very hard time for him.
Tupac appeals the verdict, but his appeal bond is set at a staggering $1.2 million, more than he can afford. So he remains stuck in Clinton, awaiting his hearing.
While Tupac was in Clinton, he just adamantly denied it. There was word on the street that he'd been raped while he was inside Clinton.
Record producer Suge Knight sees Tupac's problems as a business opportunity.
Suge Knight went into the Clinton prison where Tupac was being held, and he made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Suge Knight approached him and said, "I will bail you out. I will post bond with my attorney if you would do 3 albums with us." And so that was his ticket out of Clinton. Tupac said yes. He probably would have said yes to anything.
Knight's brazen move pays off, as one of Tupac's next 3 albums includes All Eyes on Me, which sells more than 9 million copies and makes Suge Knight a music industry powerhouse. Knight becomes so wealthy, he gives $30,000 Death Row Records medallions to all of his star players as a sign of their value to Death Row and Knight's Bloods gang. But extreme wealth doesn't keep Knight out of trouble.
Suge Knight had been involved in criminal activity, had been arrested, so certainly there were things in his background that he could be a target.
By the time of the 1996 shooting, Suge Knight's been charged with grand larceny auto, carrying a concealed weapon, battery with a deadly weapon, use of a deadly weapon to commit a crime, and attempted murder.
He had anger issues, and he wanted things done his way.
Official records are only part of the Suge Knight story.
You know, Suge Knight was from Compton. You know, certainly the detectives that deal with these gangs on a daily basis often know who all the players are.
Peterson calls on homicide detective Tim Brennan. Brennan has spent 30 years fighting crime in Compton, the epicenter of the West Coast gang scene.
You know, in my career, I've seen hundreds of gang-related murders.
Peterson knows Brennan can help. Brennan knows Suge Knight and his enemies firsthand.
I knew Suge Knight from basically him growing up in Compton while I was working the gang unit. Suge Knight, back around this time in 96, it was pretty well known in the neighborhood. He was involved in intimidation and threats and trying to get people to sign with Death Row away from other record companies. He used intimidation and the gang members around him a lot to, get what he wanted. And he usually got what he wanted up to that point. He had gathered a lot of enemies over the years. And there's a lot of people that want to do a little payback on Suge Knight.
The people who may have wanted to target Suge Knight include rival gang members and an imprisoned drug lord.
It was known to law enforcement at the time that Suge Knight had borrowed the startup money from a well-known drug trafficker who later went to federal prison. He had made a deal with this guy to, you know, pay this money back, and that this guy was supposed to share in the profits, and Suge never paid him back.
Money had been fronted to Suge Knight from an imprisoned drug lord, and that there is a falling out between Suge Knight and this drug dealer.
Did one of Suge's many enemies target him that night and catch Tupac in the crossfire?
To a gang detective working the case that knew him and the enemies that he's made would logically assume that Suge was probably the main target of that shooting.
Brennan's network of Compton informants say they don't think Suge was targeted that night. So on September 11th, Wayne Peterson asks Suge Knight himself.
Marion Suge Knight came into the section after a few days after it happened and finally agreed to be interviewed, and he brought three attorneys with him, which was kind of indicative of the lack of cooperation detectives got in the whole case.
Despite Peterson's best efforts, Suge says almost nothing.
Suge Knight said in an interview that even if he knew who did it, he wouldn't tell the police because that's not his job.
For Peterson, frustration sets in.
It was very disappointing. When you know that the eyes of the world are looking at you, that you try extra hard to solve the case, it was an uphill battle.
With Knight refusing to talk, Peterson scrambles for other evidence that suggests Knight was the target. A ballistics report on the door of Suge's BMW confirms that all the bullets were clearly aimed at Tupac's chest and leg area.
Certainly where the bullets impacted the BMW on the passenger side, they're not trying to shoot through the open window and kill the driver of the vehicle, Suge Knight. They're shooting through the door to try to hit Tupac Shakur.
It's clear the gunman likely targeted Tupac and hit his mark. 6 days after the attack, Tupac's heart repeatedly stops beating.
Even though they were keeping him breathing, they couldn't keep his heart beating. His heart stopped beating twice, and the third time it stopped beating, his mother said, don't resuscitate.
Tupac Shakur was pronounced dead at 4:03 p.m. on Friday, September 13th, 1996. He was 25 years old.
I was at the hospital when he died, and they were just somber. The mood was somber. And then one of Tupac's backup singers came through the door to outside from the trauma unit and just broke down on the sidewalk and the curb and sat down and just started crying. It was just sad. People couldn't believe that someone so vibrant, so charming, so alive could be here 1 minute and gone the next.
Everybody is sad. A lot of people can't really believe the fact that Tupac has actually died.
He spoke to his generation. They related with him, even if they weren't from the same culture. They related to him and what he spoke about.
Worldwide remorse over Tupac's death only puts more pressure on investigators Peterson and Brennan.
I tell you, homicide detectives take every case personally.
The case is stalled until Tim Brennan identifies a new suspect that will change everything.
While I looked at the footage that Las Vegas Police Department showed me of the person being beaten down, And he wasn't somebody to be played with.
Hip-hop superstar Tupac Shakur is a famous multimillionaire when he shot dead at the age of 25.
He was a poet. He was already speaking at universities. Some called him the next Malcolm X. And I don't think we'll ever know how much he could have peaked.
Tupac's burial brings no closure. So far, his brutal murder remains unsolved. But days after Tupac's death, lead Las Vegas homicide detective Wayne Peterson gets a new clue.
On my way.
We found out that MGM surveillance had this video of Tupac Shakur involved in an altercation.
MGM's security cameras capture Tupac in a beatdown after the Mike Tyson-Bruce Seldon fight the night he was shot.
We looked at that thinking that could be very significant.
Vegas cops know gang conflict spikes on fight night.
On fight night, and in particularly a Mike Tyson fight night, the group that assembles is not like a group from any other night. They are unique. It is kind of like the Super Bowl of the pimp and whore scene. There's pimps everywhere. There is prostitutes everywhere. There are gang members aplenty. And then as soon as the fight is over, you got problems, big problems everywhere.
That night, Tupac and Suge have ringside seats. MGM cameras captured Tupac and his entourage walking through the casino after the fight.
We had the video surveillance from the MGM where we can see Tupac Shakur actually assault someone else in the MGM. In the video, you can see Tupac Shakur hit the victim, and then others in the entourage join in and hitting and kicking the victim.
After the beating, Tupac and his entourage flee, leaving the victim behind.
This happened after the Tyson fight and just an hour or so before the shooting. So, you know, it's just logical to think, are these two events related? Was Tupac targeted for this? Was it retaliation for this confrontation?
Was this the incident Tupac's entourage refused to share with police?
So we had to identify this person in the video to see who he was, to see what his connection, if any, to the shooting. But at that time, we didn't know who the victim of the assault was.
The victim is wearing blue, Crip's trademark color. So Peterson calls in Compton Detective Tim Brennan for help.
Go back.
While I looked at the footage that Las Vegas Police Department showed me of the person being beaten down.
Stop it right here. I know, okay.
I immediately recognized him as Orlando Anderson from Compton.
Anderson. His name is Orlando Anderson.
Anderson.
He's a Southside Crip.
Orlando Anderson was well known to myself and my partner. We had dealt with him on prior occasions. Orlando was kind of a, what would be considered an upper-level member, a shot caller within the gang. He was kind of a heavy hitter, you know, and he had a lot of people around him that were known as shooters, murderers, and he wasn't somebody to be played with.
Tupac picked a fight with a dangerous Crip. But why? Brennan works his Compton network to find out.
When I saw the footage from the MGM of the assault of Orlando Anderson, I noticed one of the people that was doing the assaulting with Suge Knight and Tupac was a gang member from the mob known as Trayvon Lane, Trey. Trayvon had several months earlier run into Southside Crip members, including Orlando Anderson.
Anderson beats up Lane and goes after his death row medallion.
It's just a show of disrespect to snatch a death row chain because it shows allegiance with death row as allegiance to the mob or the blood gang.
Give me the chain.
No, you're dead, right?
You're dead, man!
Trayvon said it was Orlando Anderson that took it.
Death Row Records medallions are solid gold, diamond-studded, and worth up to $30,000. Lane wears one because he's in the Death Row Records inner sanctum, a high-level blood, and friends with Suge Knight and Tupac Shakur. Stealing Trayvon Lane's Death Row medallion is grounds for payback.
when they had seen Orlando Anderson at the MGM, Trayvon whispered to Tupac, hey, that's a dude tried to take my chain from the South, right? And that Tupac had ran up on Orlando Anderson and said something to the effect, you from the South, and then came up and he hit him.
Certainly it would give Tupac Shakur street credibility if he retaliated for Trayvon Lane, you know, at the MGM when they saw the person that had attacked Trayvon Lane.
I don't believe he fully knew the repercussions of, you know, what's going to happen after he does this.
Peterson wonders if Orlando Anderson was the killer.
Orlando Anderson was in a rival gang. This beating at the MGM certainly would lead him to want to retaliate.
After Tupac attacks Orlando Anderson, he leaves the casino and heads into the Vegas Strip. If Orlando Anderson was the killer, how did he find Tupac only 90 minutes later?
Woo! Yeah!
It was all over the radio. Club 662 was having a party at $75 to get in. And Tupac was going to be there. Tyson was going to be there. And there's no secret where Tupac was going to be.
The only way to get to the 662 Club from Las Vegas Boulevard is on Flamingo Road. So if you want to find him, all you have to do is be on Flamingo Road.
With Tupac's fame and Suge's paranoia, how is a killer able to get past their security detail?
Suge should have known better. He should have looked out more for him.
At the age of 25, Tupac Shakur, rapper, poet, and voice of a generation, is dead. And investigator Wayne Peterson thinks rival gang member Orlando Anderson had a motive to kill him.
After the heavyweight fight and the altercation that happened at the MGM, everyone knew that Tupac and Suge were going to the 662 Club on Flamingo Road.
Orlando got his crew together and then just went headed right over there, trying to catch these guys and give them a little payback.
For Peterson, something still doesn't add up. Suge Knight and Tupac had a security convoy with them at the time of the shooting.
We knew that there was a long line of cars in this entourage following Suge Knight and Tupac Shakur.
How did the shooter break through Tupac's security?
The women that we interviewed and other people at the scene gave us that information of how the entourage was traveling down Flamingo Road.
There was other cars, but they're all like kind of behind.
Yeah, it was like a trail of cars.
All the vehicles in the entourage were behind their vehicle. So when the shooting happened, there was no one in front, no one on the side protecting him.
Yeah!
I've done dignitary protection, and that is not how you keep an asset safe.
After it was known within his own security detail that he had been in a fight earlier that night, much more effort should have been taken to protect him.
Suddenly, all the evidence points to rival gang member Orlando Anderson.
There are three things that cops, investigators look at when it comes to murder: opportunity, motive, and means. Orlando had all three.
Peterson finally has a complete picture of what happened the night Tupac was killed. After the brawl at the MGM Grand, Tupac and Suge head to Club 662, where Tupac is scheduled to perform.
Tupac's getting out, you know, rapping his songs through the sunroof. Completely vulnerable after a beatdown of a rival Crips member.
I think he just got in over his head and didn't understand that Orlando Anderson was of the status that, you know, you don't just beat this guy down and expect he's going to lay down and take it. He's going to go right back at you.
These guys think they're invincible, they're going to live forever, and they're untouchable.
They're living for the day. They're young guys, you know, and, you know, they're probably smoking a little weed and drinking and partying. So they're probably not thinking too much about their security.
Tupac should not have been exposed and next to the door of a vehicle. He should have had close protection agents immediately on both sides of him.
Investigators believe Anderson's car moves into the right of Tupac's car and waits for his moment to take revenge.
They should have been much more on guard for anybody trying to come up and get a little payback for what they had just done.
If Orlando Anderson killed Tupac, Peterson and Brennan need the murder weapon to prove it.
Go, 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 go!
We always hope for that chance that maybe somewhere the murder weapon turns up and we can match ballistics. Because if we have the weapon, then we have a way to, you know, go backwards and track it.
Investigators need to find the weapon that fired the .40 caliber shells that killed Tupac. To find it, Las Vegas police and Compton police team up for one of the biggest raids in Compton history.
Our efforts to try to solve this case included us doing raids at 40 locations that my partner and I prepared, involving about 900 cops.
Brennan's targets include Orlando Anderson's house.
Police, open up!
Do not move! Do not move! Show me your hands!
I went in the house along with my partner and we detained him. He had a 9mm gun.
Brennan finds other potential evidence in Anderson's house.
We saw several weapons, AK-47, shotgun, a MAC-11 pistol, all at the location. And then there was a box of .40 caliber rounds, and I was aware that a .40 caliber Glock was used in the murder of Tupac Shakur.
Brennan has questions for Orlando Anderson.
I did the interview with him and then asked him what happened in Las Vegas.
Tupac beat you down at the MGM? Yeah.
He admitted that he was in Las Vegas and that he had been there for the fight and was beaten down by Suge and Tupac and other members of the mob. He would not admit to being involved in the shooting of Tupac and Suge Knight at that time.
Did you go for a little payback on that?
No, sir.
Brennan asks about the .40 caliber shells.
.40 cal.
Never seen those before, man.
Let's get him out of here. Stand up, Orlando. Come on.
When we arrested Orlando Anderson, I mean, he was a convicted felon. I mean, we brought him in for the gun. You know, that's another charge. He's not supposed to have a gun.
Anderson is arrested for violating his parole, but he's soon released.
We had to let him go.
The .40 caliber shells Brennan found at Orlando's house don't match the casings at the Tupac crime scene.
They were a different brand than the box of rounds that we had.
Nor can any of the weapons found during the raids be linked to the Tupac murder.
We did not recover any bullets or guns that were related to specifically the Tupac case.
It's anybody's guess where the murder weapon may be. You know, smart criminal, of course, would have gotten rid of it, but criminals aren't always smart. But also, the gun that killed Tupac Shakur would be a huge trophy. So this gun could be anywhere.
For 2 years after Tupac's death, Brennan keeps looking for proof Orlando committed the murder.
I don't give up on murders. That's a case that's never closed until there is some form of justice brought on the case.
In 1998, Brennan sees Orlando Anderson one last time.
About 2 years after this murder of Tupac, my partner and I were coming out of the back lot of the Compton police station and we heard a barrage of gunshots going off. We immediately started driving towards the gunshots, and when I got there, I noticed that there were four people shot, and one of them I recognized was Orlando Anderson. He was shot in the chest.
Orlando Anderson was shot dead by rival Bloods gang members at a car wash, May 29th, 1998, almost 2 years after Tupac was killed.
Orlando Anderson basically died in a drug deal gone bad. It was just a shootout back and forth and had nothing to do with the Tupac case.
After years of trying to bring him to justice for Tupac's death, Brennan watches Orlando Anderson in his final moments.
I was one of the last people to see Orlando Anderson alive when he was taking his last breaths at the scene, and I just had a lot of thoughts thinking about, man, this is how it ends. I don't really believe justice was served, and I guess it's just what goes around comes around.
For Peterson, Tupac died the way he lived.
Tupac Shakur sings about gang life and crime, so he had thug life tattooed across his stomach. So that's the lifestyle he lived. Live by the sword, die by the sword.
The media offers endless conspiracy theories about who was behind the Tupac shooting. From rival rappers Biggie Smalls and Sean Combs to claims Tupac faked his own death.
Everybody wants to grasp that this icon of music couldn't have gotten killed over just some stupid gang stuff. People don't want to accept, the obvious sometimes.
The experts who investigated the case all have the same opinion on who killed Tupac Shakur.
Tupac Shakur was shot and killed by Orlando Anderson.
Orlando Anderson was responsible for the shooting of Tupac.
In spite of the experts' belief that Orlando Anderson was the killer, Tupac's murder remains officially unsolved.
The case is still an open investigation, an unsolved homicide, and my personal belief is it will always remain an unsolved homicide.
Hollywood Homicide Uncovered comes from the Dark Hollywood Collection at Reels Channel. To get more like this when you watch TV, go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com. Check the top of your screen and enter your zip code to find us on your system. You'll also find extras from the latest real crime programs that are only on Reels. Find Hollywood Homicide Uncovered and its companions on Roku and Fire TV too.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called The Big Brother Jake Podcast, and I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby. Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything. Life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess, but it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.